Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Turkmenistan is one of the most repressive countries on earth. This is the assessment the country gets almost in every report produced by independent NGOs involving any form of liberty and rights. But when it comes to the situation in the prison facilities of Turkmenistan, the horrific toll of human tragedy takes you to an entirely different level. We are not talking only about tortures in jail, not because that there is lack of it, but there are tens of people who have literally disappeared in Turkmen jail, some of them a decade ago. And worst of all, number of such cases appears to be on the rise. Authorities try to keep such cases under cover and mostly ignores any call for accountability. But there is an NGO which made the uncovering of these atrocities its mission. Initiative is called Prove They Are Alive. The campaign Prove They Are Alive takes its name from the famous speech of the current Turkmen president, Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov, a couple of years ago, if you remember, answering to a question at the Columbia University about the fate of the most prominent former foreign minister, Boris Sheikhmuradov. The president said he believes Sheikhmuradov is alive. So today on the Majlis, we plan to discuss the campaign Prove They Are Alive, its work, success and setbacks, also recent addition of new names to the database. To discuss this, I am thrilled to have two active members of the campaign, Ricardo Lepri, advocacy manager for Prove They Are Alive in Europe, who's joining us today from Tbilisi. Richard Denber, deputy director of Human Rights Watch for Europe and Central Asia, is with us from New York. And as always, my colleague Bruce Panier is joining me from Prague, who is the editor of Kishlok Owozi, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's blog on Central Asia. Ricardo, Richard, Bruce, welcome on board.
Thank you
so much for doing this, for dedicating a podcast to this.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us. So, Ricardo, first let's start with you. I see you have updated the database of the disappeared people in Turkmen jails on this September. And the new number on the list currently stands at 112 versus 88 previously. Tell us, please, a little bit about it and who are they?
Well, we are constantly researching and checking whether there are new cases. And as you can imagine, it is extremely difficult to get information and mostly to verify information from Turkmenistan.
Right.
We have now 112 cases that we consider certain, although there may be more. Huh. We estimate there may be another few dozen people in this situation, although it is difficult to confirm all that. As regards the new cases, basically it's more or less the same pattern. People who have probably committed crimes and who have been perceived by the authorities as a threat. They were becoming too powerful, they were becoming too influential, or they've done something that has, in simple words, upset someone very important. There is also a group of people that before we didn't have in the list. It's a number of people who have been charged with Islamic extremism. But again, the pattern is the same. The pattern is that regardless to what crime these people have been accused of or might have committed, they are kept in full isolation. No contact whatsoever with the rest of the world, with their families, with their relatives.
Ricardo, you briefly mentioned the cases of the people who are allegedly involved in the religious extremism charges. Previously, people in the disappeared database were mostly either those who allegedly participated in the alleged coup attempt against the then President Niyazov in 2002 or some economic crisis, but now you have this list. So how to read this new group of people, Ricardo?
Well, to be honest, it's a bit difficult to read it from an analytical point of view. Why is it that all of a sudden the Turkmen authorities decided to start charging people with Islamic extremists and decided that these people must be kept in full isolation? I do not have an exact reading of this myself.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, your point
is? I do not really completely understand why for the others it is clear what the threat, the perceived threat was. Mm. For these ones, I don't really understand it.
Okay. Rachel, your take on this?
Well, I think very hard to speculate. Though there are a couple of possibilities. One, maybe they just want to send a very, very strong message to anybody who's thinking about any kind of involvement in any kind of political Islam movement. Maybe they just don't know what to do, and they're, you know, all of the security officials are just guessing that this is probably the only thing they can do. Or maybe they're just paranoid. You know, this is the situation in the country is very unstable, or could be very unstable, and they're paranoid about a movement. But, you know, actually, I think one of the best explanations is they've gotten away with it before. Why not do it again now? That way they can control these people. They get to send a message. They can control people. They can make sure that no one has, you know, by making sure that no one has any contact with them, they can prevent them from becoming, you know, from information getting out and getting out to others who they might think are active in, you know, in political Islam. But I think, yeah, I mean, I think most of all, they know they can get away with it.
Mm. Did you came across with any specific charges against these people, Rachel? What the authorities are alleging they have done?
I can tell you what is public. Hmm. Well, no, not even public. All we have seen on these cases is a abbreviated version of the verdict. That part of the verdict that you can use. It's not the full verdict. It's an abbreviated version that leaves out all of the information about the substantive reasons for that the charges were brought, you know, the so-called, you know, the alleged facts that of what these people were accused of actually doing to trigger, you know, to trigger these charges of extremism and the like. So this is something that other countries have done in some cases when they don't, you know, they think they claim for security reasons that this has to be remain confidential or classified. So all we know is that, you know, all that's been made, it's not even made public. The only thing that we've seen is this abbreviated verdict that gives no facts whatsoever of what they actually did. I imagine that it's got something to do with them, you know, with people meeting to talk, you know, having discussion groups, maybe some money transfers for, you know, support for various things. But no, there's nothing. There is absolutely zero transparency.
Hmm. And Bruce, most of the people who were arrested in connection with extremism apparently detained around October, November 2016. Does it say anything to you in terms of the domestic developments involving radicalism, etc.?
Well, yeah, I've seen reports on some of these cases, you know, and I would agree. I think part of the big problem is that they're worried that some of these local religious figures were gaining the kind of popularity that the Turkmen government would prefer that nobody had, you know. But I mean, we can't totally disconnect this from what's happening south of the border. I would say too. We know that there's been fighting in all the northern Afghan provinces that border Turkmenistan. It used to just be the Taliban against the government, but lately there's groups that claim, anyway, that they're part of Daesh, these so-called Islamic State movement. Whether they are or not part of that latter movement, the point is that there's another extremist group besides the Taliban that's present down in just south of the Turkmen border. And I think that's also something that's given new paranoia to the Turkmen government's policies and caused them to refocus their attention on exactly what the religious people inside Turkmenistan are doing at the moment.
Hmm. Rachel, just to expand this, the recent detainees also tell us that the cases of the disappeared people is no more only as a result of former president's action. Because the recent detainees are as latest as 2016. Berd Mohamedov appears also to be equally responsible in own this horrific violation of human rights. What's your take?
Berdi Mohamedov inherited this problem.
Yeah.
He had an opportunity and an obligation to end forced disappearances of the people who had been isolated in the years and during the Niyazov years. He had an obligation, he had the opportunity, and he didn't move on it. And I keep focusing on Berdi Mohamedov because this is a very, very top-down regime on an issue as serious as forced disappearances and as sensitive as, you know, that particular cohort of inmates. No one but the president can make a decision. Everyone knows that that's how things work in Turkmenistan. So he had the opportunity, he had the obligation, and he did nothing. And that in and of itself I mean, after a while, you know, for 6 months, you can really, the first 6 months of the first year, you sort of give the new guy the benefit of the doubt, and you know, you sort of encourage him to act on this, to, you know, do the right thing. And then after that, it's you know, it's just complicity. And we've seen that there are new disappearances.
So, Ricardo, the ones on the list are those who you think have disappeared in jails. Any estimate how many people might have been arrested in total with similar charges of extremism in recent years? I know I call it estimate because we don't know the exact number.
I mean, we don't have clear estimates. Last year, I remember there was information about up to 150 people arrested upon charges of belonging to the organization of Fethullah Gulen. But I don't see a correspondence between that and these enforced disappearances, although nine of the cases that we have documented are people who have been accused to be part of that, of the organization of Fethullah Gulen. Now, nine of the people who have been charged with Islamic extremism.
Richard, I see Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty's reporter, Sepah Mehmet Nefes Guliev, also added to the list of the disappeared people in Turkmen jail. So tell us, please, how this decision was made.
Well, because of forced what's an enforced disappearance? An enforced disappearance is a situation where the family has absolutely zero official information about the fate and whereabouts of their loved one who was last seen in custody. So if we're talking about official information, then Nepes Kuliev's case would be, you could consider that an enforced disappearance. There's different information about the family, about what kind of access or information the family has had, because it's been, you can imagine that in Turkmenistan, there's so much pressure on the families of people who are convicted and sentenced on sensitive or even unsensitive cases. So, this family, I think at a certain, very soon after Nepes Kuliev was arrested and convicted, was extremely nervous about and hesitant and anxious about having any kind of contact with any organization to provide any information about what they knew and didn't know about his fate and whereabouts.
Right. Thank you, Rachel, for this insight. So this was the reality on the ground. It has been some time since the campaign is underway. So what has been its impact, achievements and setbacks? And more importantly, what are the plans for the future? We will continue the discussion talking about this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Mejlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis we are discussing Prove They Are Alive. The campaign highlights sufferings of the prisoners in Turkmen jails. To discuss this, I'm joined by Ricardo Lepri, advocacy manager for the Prove They Are Alive campaign in Europe, Richard Ember, deputy director of Human Rights Watch for Europe and Central Asia, Bruce Panier, the editor of Kishlok Owozi, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty's blog on Central Asia. I am Mohamed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, colleagues. So, Ricardo, let's go back to you and also discuss a little bit the origin of the campaign. What is it that you hope that initiative will accomplish, and how far you come in achieving your objectives?
Well, what we want is that the Turkmen authorities grant access to those prisoners, that they interrupt this practice of keeping them in full isolation from anything. A practice that, among the rest, is against the law of Turkmenistan itself, let alone international standards. That is the main objective, in connection with which we would like to see monitoring of prison facilities by international organizations, such as the ICRC. We would like to see the invitation of all the UN special procedures, including the special rapporteurs on torture, because torture and ill-treatment, we all know, is quite a problem in the prison facilities in Turkmenistan. So these are, let's say, the objectives which we have published and we keep repeating in every time we have any sort of public and private initiative with international interlocutors. We have also tried to contact the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Turkmenistan, sent a few letters, request to meet us, but they have never replied, not once. That is what we want to achieve. Then you have to remind me what the second question was.
I mean, yeah, how far you come in achieving whatever your objectives was. Like you partly mentioned that also in your response. Actually, one follow-up question I had, Rachel also touched upon this. I kind of missed to ask this in the previous part. Some of the people on the list, Ricardo, are purportedly arrested just a year ago, especially the ones who were charged with the extremism-related issues. Isn't that too early to declare them disappeared?
No, because according to the Turkmen law, there's a minimal number of visits per year. So if a year passes and no visit has taken place and no information has been received about the detainee, about the prisoner, we think there's a cause to state that these people are forcibly disappeared. There isn't exactly a time limit, a fixed time limit. Because it depends on depends also on what the legislation foresees. So in our case, it's the minimal number of visits that simply do not take place.
Okay. Rachel, your organization is a part of the campaign. Also, you are the chief advocate for human rights when it comes to Central Asia. Needless to say that advocacy has lots of legs, lots of target audience. So what are the areas this initiative have done better than some other areas so far?
Well, I don't know what you mean by better than some other areas. I can tell you about our initiatives. I mean, I think what the campaign has succeeded in doing is creating an issue for that Turkmenistan's international partners have to engage on, an issue that hadn't been an issue before for them. Now, you know, our campaign's been, you know, ever since we've been active for the past 3 years, I think we've been quite successful in making this one of the central issues on Turkmenistan. I don't think that there's a single meeting, or there are very few meetings that happen that have in any way, you know, touch on human rights. Meetings between, say, the EU or the US or at the UN, when there's a human rights dimension to the meeting, or the OSCE, where the issue of disappearances is not raised, where it's not front and center. So, I mean, our goal obviously is to have, you know, ensure that these people's fate and whereabouts has been clarified and that they have some access to justice. But also, I mean, our sort of intermediate goal is to make the government respond in a meaningful way, make them provide information to the loved ones, make them know that they can't wish this issue away, that the international community is going to constantly be flagging it for them, raising it for them. So, I mean, I think that we know that that the EU, when it has its bilateral dialogue with Turkmenistan, and annually, that this issue was raised. We know it gets raised in the context of the OSCE. We know it gets raised in the context of the annual bilateral dialogues with the United States. You know, we need to put it on the agenda. You know, when Bernie Mukhamedov, rather rare when he meets with other heads of state, we try to put this issue on the agenda. We certainly put it on the agenda, you know, at the UN Human Rights Council, and you know, whenever Turkmenistan is reviewed by any human rights body, whether it's the Committee Against Torture, the Committee on Civil and Political Rights, and other relevant committees, we always put this issue on the agenda. They're always having to hear about it.
Yeah, in terms of putting this situation on the spotlight, correct? It has been on the agenda. We have seen it in many events, international events, but. As of making authorities accountable, how far are you succeeding in this aspect?
Ricardo, would you like me to answer that?
We could both answer.
Okay.
You want to go first or shall I go first?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Well, in terms of response, there has been some. Twice already, the government of Turkmenistan sent a delegation to the OSCE Human Dimension Implementation Meeting, and the head of the delegation in his official intervention at plenary at one working session actually mentioned the issue of the disappeared in a very neutral way. He even mentioned the campaign by just calling it the campaign without calling it by name. He didn't use the word enforced disappearances. He mentioned people sentenced to long prison terms. And it basically, the message was, we're working on it.
Hmm.
Although he didn't really say we're working on it. In fact, they are not really working on it. They're not doing much.
Hmm.
My feeling is that they wanted to respond somehow, but they also, in reality, want to take time, hoping that the international community gets tired of this issue,
hmm.
that the pressure at some point will just fade away.
Hmm.
So there is a reaction, but it's far from what we want to achieve. And to us, this is a further stimulus to continue with our pressure.
Rachel, do you want to continue, Ricardo?
Well, I think Ricardo said it all. Hmm. I mean, I think that the Turkmen authorities are hoping for attrition. They're hoping that the international community just gets tired of this issue. We also know that the Turkmen authorities have tried to do other things to avoid having to do something on disappearances.
Hmm.
So we have seen them when international partners pressure them on the disappeared. On a couple of occasions, we've seen the Turkmen authorities make other steps that are probably not very impactful, but they're interesting, and you can see that they're trying to show that they're doing something.
Okay, let's take it to domestic situation, Bruce. So what impact it's having on the ground from your point of view?
Well, obviously, it's difficult to say because it's hard to get a lot of information at all. You know, for what it's worth, I would imagine that it prevents, it certainly prevents some more excesses than we see right now. If the Turkmen government really thought they could get away with anything and no one would notice and no one would say anything about it, then the situation would be probably worse than it is now. And I know that's kind of hard to imagine, actually, but I'm certain that there's new depths that we haven't seen yet out there that they could go to. You know, so that's good. It's good that they know that they can't get away with stuff because, you know, part of the reason the Turkmen government gets away with what it does is it doesn't have a whole lot of international exposure. You know, it's not a part of big multinational organizations and things, you know, the UN, yeah, but it's not real connected with Europe and with the West, for instance, and really with anywhere. So it's hard to put pressure on the government in such a situation, you know, but there are times when the Turkmen government does need some kind of help or has to do business with someone in the West. And for that reason, they do have to consider a little bit some of the consequences of their domestic policies because they never know when they're going to have to turn to Europe or the United States or something and say, we do need some help with this. And if they haven't been willing to even do the bare minimum to try to respect human rights, which probably bare minimum is more than they're doing now, I would say. But if they're unwilling to do anything, then they're not going to have much success when reaching out for help when they need it, at least in the West.
Right, yeah. It's been a very eye-opening discussion, but unfortunately we have to end it. Going towards the conclusion, Ricardo, if you were to start the campaign again, is there anything you would do differently?
No. I think the campaign has done all what was possible to raise this issue and to exercise pressure as on international interlocutors and on the Turkmen themselves. No, I don't think that there's anything that I would have done in a different way.
Hmm. Rachel, based on the performance so far, what are the plans for the future?
Well, I also want to address the question you just asked, Ricardo. I think that people have to, we'll also connect to my answer to your second question.
Yeah.
I think we have to not lose sight of the government that we are dealing with. You know, someone once asked me a couple of months ago, someone from a fairly well-known organization, they were asking about the campaign. You know, he said, oh, come on, after 3 years, what have you, you know, no one's been released. what's the campaign really achieving anyway? It was a harsh question, but I was glad that he asked it because it was really important for him to remember and for me to remember, what is it that we're dealing with? We're dealing with one of the most, as you said, one of the most closed and repressive and obstinate and erratic governments on Earth. It's not as though, and who are we? We're a bunch of extremely dedicated NGOs. So this is going to be a long, hard climb and we're ready for it. Okay, so we have to remember this is a government that, you know, that won't do elementary basic things for human rights. And here what we're pushing for is for them to stop a very serious crime you know, because disappearances are a crime. So I think we have to, you know, bear in mind the magnitude of the issue we're dealing with and the magnitude of the obstinance and repressiveness of this government. So our plans are to keep moving forward. Our plans are to keep putting this on the agenda. Our plans are to make sure that the Turkmen government knows that this is not going to be a war of attrition. We're not going to drop out. Neither are the international partners. And, you know, their international partners. I'm sure there are other precedents when governments have been pushed and pushed and pushed, you know, for years on these issues. But this is always an urgent question because it's people's, you know, liberty, rights and survival, you know, right to life, essentially, that we have, you know, that are at stake. But also some of these people who've been in jail since the early 2000s, they were not sentenced to life imprisonment. Some of them, you know, for some of them, their sentences are coming up, are going to expire. You know, there's a couple whose sentences expire in 2017, 2018, and 2019. Where are they? This is quite urgent. It's urgent also because some of the disappeared are, we are finding out about their deaths. So it's a question of survival, life, and death.
Thank you for great work, Rachel. So is there anything anyone can do to help you in this cause?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, I think that your listeners can help by really pushing the Turkmen government's international interlocutors to keep this on the agenda. Your listeners inside Turkmenistan can help by not losing hope.
Ricardo, just a final point. You said earlier that this list might not be the full list of the disappeared people. So what can people do to help you?
It's easy to say and extremely difficult to do, but the more people would come out and inform us about situations in which they do not see or they know that someone has not been heard of for a too long amount of time and provide as much evidence as possible to it, that is the help that could, let's say, help us add in more cases and confirming that this is not something that should be forgotten, as, in my opinion, the Turkmen authorities hope it will be.
Bruce, final note, as an outsider, any suggestion?
Well, you know, first I got to say I have nothing but admiration for both Human Rights Watch and Group Accountability for keeping these kind of issues in the public's eye as much as is possible. And I think that's probably a lot of what needs to be done. You know, the more people that are aware of this and the more articles there are about this, the reports about, the disappeared in Turkmenistan, the more likely we are to see some kind of movement on the part of the authorities in Ashgabat. And that's really what we got to hope for, is just to keep it up. To show them that it's not going to go away. You know, we know there's hard economic times in Turkmenistan. Going to need help from somebody here pretty soon. And, you know, there's got to be some quid pro quo coming up here if they're going to turn to countries that call themselves democratic. They say, you know, yes, we can help you with your financial problems, but you're going to have to show us that you're willing to do something to implement some kind of democratic reforms or show some basic respect for human rights.
Right, right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Kishlak Awazi, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty's blog on Central Asia. And big thanks goes to Ricardo Lepri, Europe Advocacy Manager for Proof They Are Alive, and Rachel Denber, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch for Europe and Central Asia. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure to have you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.